Welcome to the second hour's reading of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
OA lawsuit against city will be heard today. Odessa's legal bill at $60,000 so far. OA News at OAOA.com. The Odessa American's open records legal fight with the city heads to court today, even as the city escalates its gamesmanship in withholding public information from the newspaper. A hearing is scheduled today before visiting State District Judge Rodney Satterwhite at the Ector County Courthouse in the Odessa American's lawsuit that accuses the city of Odessa of violating the Texas Public Information Act by not releasing public information in a timely manner. But in recent weeks, city officials have become even more belligerent in their unwillingness to release public reports in accordance with open records laws. As recently as last week, the city continued to request that OA reporters agree to redactions in public reports they were requesting, even if those deletions may have been legally questionable. If the reporter agreed, then the document with the redactions would be released immediately. If the reporter did not agree to the redactions, the entire report would be sent for review to the Attorney General's office, a move that would cause a delay of about 6 weeks. "That's outrageous," OA publisher Patrick Canty said. "Basically, what we're seeing is a type of extortion in which what's in play is not money but rather public information. The city is essentially telling the reporter either the reporter agrees to take what the city chooses to give them or the city will punish the reporter and the public by making them wait for weeks for information they are entitled to now. Things have degenerated to the point that the city last week also refused to provide a police report in a matter as simple as a case of a missing or stolen dog. The city did provide a heavily redacted police report about the dog on Wednesday." "This really is breathtaking," Canty said. "What we are seeing on display here is either an example of utter ineptitude by the city or a complete disregard for good, open, and transparent government." Satterwhite has been specially assigned to hear the case, which was originally scheduled to be adjudicated by 161st District Court Judge John Smith. Austin lawyers hired by the city previously sought to have the case heard in Austin and to drag the Texas Attorney General's office into the lawsuit, a move the AG's office continues to oppose. The city has paid the Austin firm, Cobb and Counsel, more than $60,000 to fight the lawsuit, which the newspaper filed in January. That figure does not include any fees incurred during September or October. John Bushin, a national authority on First Amendment law, is lead counsel for the OA and its parent company, AIM Media Texas, LLC. Assisting Bushin in the case is Midland attorney Randall Rouse. Papers filed in advance of today's scheduled hearing detail the OA's assertion that the city of Odessa has systematically violated the Texas Public Information Act by taking days to screen every request, delaying the release of records the public is clearly entitled to see. Initially, the city was sending most requests to the AG for review, but more recently has somewhat backtracked, sending only some to the state. "This is patently illegal," County said. "State law is very clear in enumerating very limited types of information in police reports and probable cause affidavits that can be withheld from the public. Otherwise, the information should be released to the public immediately, not in a matter of weeks or months." Attorney Paul C. Wattler, a partner at the Dallas firm Jackson Walker, said via email that for more than 40 years, Texas law has been well settled that departments must promptly release basic information gathered by officers about crimes, including the identity of victims. Most cities, Wattler noted, routinely provide basic information to the public and news media about crimes that occur in the city. Prior to filing its lawsuit, the OA had battled the city for months to provide public documents that include police reports and probable cause affidavits in a timely manner and without redacting information that has always been considered public information under Texas law. The city abruptly changed the traditional practice of releasing public crime information following the Odessa mass shooting on August 31, 2019, that resulted in the deaths of 7 people and the wounding of 25 others. Police reports from that shooting that were requested in the days following the incident were only released in late January. It was after the shootings that the city began to demand freedom of information requests for all probable cause affidavits and police reports, despite assertions by the OA and its media partner, CBS 7, that such a move violates the Texas Public Information Act, TPIA. Information that is always considered public does not require an FOI request, certainly not information that is covered under the TPIA. The change by the city resulted in reports on basic crimes being delayed by days, weeks, or even months, and often with large portions of the reports blacked out. In the past, the Odessa American received requested police records from the municipal court and not the city attorney's office, and often received those records in a few hours and unredacted. But following the Odessa mass shooting, the city attorney announced that no records would be released until they were vetted by lawyers for the city. City Councilman Tom Sprawls told OA reporter Bob Campbell in January that he and other city officials were unhappy that the OA and CBS 7 were able to get the names of victims quickly after the mass shooting, adding that victims' names shouldn't have been public until long after the shootings. He said crime victim names should not be revealed too quickly. But the law is clear that local elected officials do not get to decide what information should be revealed or how quickly. Some in city government in Odessa have reportedly staged a campaign that they are trying to protect sexual assault victims and children from having their names released. But Canty countered that this is a moot point. Those names, he said, are already protected, and the OA and other news media organizations have never used or sought to use sexual assault victim names or those of children. That is nothing but a red herring, he added. They are merely trying to distract attention from the real issue, which is that they are violating their obligation as public servants to be accountable to the public by releasing information entitled to the public. Kelly Shannon, executive director of the Freedom of Information Foundation of Texas, said she hopes the Odessa American's lawsuit results in city officials understanding that it's not their role to control the flow of public information. They are only the custodians of the people's information, she said. The public has a right to know what's going on in their community, whether it's good news or sad news. Crime news must be reported, not hidden. In the case of the 2019 mass shooting in Odessa, information helps the community better understand what took place and may possibly lead to solutions for how to prevent such a horrific episode in the future. City officials should not be routinely redacting information, she added. They must, in almost all cases, seek a Texas Attorney General ruling to get permission to withhold information. And the issue doesn't just affect news organizations from inspecting crime reports. Odessan Justin Rodriguez said it took about 3 months for him to receive a copy of a police report that he himself had filed alleging injury to a child. The report, Rodriguez said, cost him $60 and months of his time. "And these were just records requested on myself," he wrote via email. That report, like all police reports, should be open and available for inspection, but not just the media, but also the public. Quick production of public information is needed to keep the public informed in a timely manner, Shannon said. The lawsuit has been slowed mainly due to COVID-19 and filings from the city's Austin-based attorneys. In one motion filed by the Austin firm, attorneys argued the OA's complaint is with the Attorney General and not the city. But the OA specifically alleges that the city, not the Attorney General's office, violated the TPIA by failing to promptly release public information and by unreasonably redacting public information after unreasonable delay. In late April, the AG's office filed a motion to deny the City of Odessa's request that the AG be brought into the lawsuit to defend the city's position. As for trying to blame the Attorney General's office for the city's delays and withholding of public information, that's a far-fetched argument and really is making a mockery of our Texas open government laws, Shannon said. The city could spend its attorney fees in much better ways helping local residents. It does sound like city officials should spend a little time and effort on open government training for themselves. Wattler also wrote that the city's attempt to bring the Attorney General into the case is novel. "I am not familiar with another case under the Texas Public Information Act in which this tactic has been tried," he said. "The Attorney General appears to me to have a strong position that the court should not permit the city to bring the AG into the lawsuit." The City of Odessa even requested, at one point, that the court transfer the entire case to Travis County, where the Attorney General's office is located. The case cannot be transferred unless the judge grants the joinder. Texas public information champions are watching the case. The Texas Press Association and America's Newspapers, which represents more than 1,000 daily and weekly digital and print newspapers, recently issued strong statements of support of the OA's legal battle against the city. Gannett, owner of the Austin American Statesman, the El Paso Times, and six other daily Texas newspapers, offered its support as well. COVID-19 news by the numbers. Ector County total cases, both confirmed and probable, 5,167. Ector County negative, 22,820 out of 28,317 tested, with 330 pending, 100 deaths. Recovered, 4,353. Active, 714. ECISD daily cases, 3 students, 1 staff. Midland County, 4,035 confirmed, 85 deaths. Texas, 777,556 confirmed, with 6,664,440 tested. Total Texas deaths, 16,230. U.S. cases, 7,475,262 total confirmed and 210,232 deaths. Find out more at co.ector.tx.us or dshs.state.tx.us or the CDC site at tinyurl.com/TZTRJLF. See the ECISD COVID-19 dashboard at tinyurl.com/Y6NTPTUQ. quick hits, scarecrow decorating contest, the Ector County Library Children's Department, 321 West 5th Street, has scheduled Decorate the Scarecrow contest through October 23rd. Kids, middle grade children, teens, and adults are invited to decorate a scarecrow like their favorite book character. Participants may drop off their decorated scarecrow entries October 23rd at the library. Entry forms and patterns are available on the third floor. Entry deadline is noon, October 23rd. Final judging will be conducted on the same day. Contest rules are: scarecrows should represent a favorite book character. On the entry form, the title and author of the book must be included. Do not write your name anywhere on your scarecrow. Entry form number will be recorded with participant's name when scarecrow is entered by returning it to the children's department on the third floor. All designs must be family-friendly. This is a home project. Design size is limited to the size of the pattern, and use products to decorate that are safe for everyone. Scarecrows will be judged according to the following categories, and prizes will be awarded in each category: kids, ages 4 to 7, middle grade, 8 to 12, teens, 13 to 18, and adults, 18 plus. Winners will be announced live on an Ector County Facebook event at 4 p.m. October 26th. All scarecrows must be picked up by November 2nd. For more information, call 332-2118 or visit ector.lib.tx.us. Free Magic Show. Music City Mall has scheduled a free magic show featuring Bronson Chadwick from noon to 2 p.m. Saturday by the Carousel Stage. Seats will be socially distanced, and the show is friendly to kids under 12. Visit www.musiccitymall.net. Texas Size Garage Sale. Senior Life has scheduled the Texas Size Garage Sale, benefiting Meals on Wheels, to open free to the public for 6 days with two sessions each day from 9 a.m. to 11 a.m. and from noon to 2 p.m. Friday, Saturday, Tuesday, October 15th, 20th, and 22nd at 407 East Scarborough Drive, Midland. Only 100 people will be allowed in during each session. Masks are required. Masks will not be provided. Sponsorships are available. For more information, visit www.seniorlifemidland.org. Closing prices. Posted, $36.25. Futures, $39.95. Natural gas, $2.606. Benchmark U.S. fell 72 cents to $39.95 per barrel on the New York Mercantile Exchange. Hello, this is Kay reading the Odessa American for Thursday, October 8th, 2020. Page 2, read. New look. Workers wrangle a yet-to-be-installed portion of Odessa Regional Medical Center's new sign on Wednesday afternoon. Eli Hartman, Odessa American. Local news roundup. Man remains in critical condition after motorcycle collision. An Odessa motorcyclist remains in critical condition after he was involved in a two-vehicle collision in central Odessa, a medical center hospital spokesperson stated in an email on Wednesday morning. The reported collision happened 4:29 p.m. Tuesday near the intersection of Blossom Lane and Bonham Avenue, an Odessa Police Department press release stated. Investigation reportedly showed that 30-year-old Mark Netherland Jr. of Odessa was driving a Harley-Davidson motorcycle west on Blossom Lane. A Dodge Ram driven by 57-year-old Ermelinda Figueroa Figueroa of Odessa was traveling north on Bonham Avenue. Netherland ran a stop sign and struck the Dodge Ram, the press release stated. Netherland was transported to MCH with life-threatening injuries, and Figueroa was transported to a local hospital with non-life-threatening injuries. MCH Director of Public Relations Trevor Tankersley stated in an email that Netherland was listed in critical condition on Wednesday morning. There were no reports of any other injuries. The investigation continues. Police seek pharmacy store theft suspect. The Odessa Police Department is reportedly searching for a man connected to a theft with a firearm at a pharmacy store. The reported theft happened at 2:36 p.m. August 28th at the Walgreens located at 801 Maple Avenue, an OPD press release stated. Investigation reportedly showed that a man threatened the clerk with a gun and demanded narcotics. The man fled the scene in a dark-colored SUV. OPD has released photos of the man and the SUV on his website that can be seen at tinyurl.com/5BOP4CN. Anyone with information about the theft is asked to contact Detective Kay Thompson at 432-335-4609 or Odessa Crime Stoppers at 432-333-TIPS, T-I-P-S, and reference case number 20-0015279. OA News at OAOA.com. Hello, this is Kay reading the Odessa American for Thursday, October 8th, 2020. State. Ector County policyholders receive $8 million in dividends from Texas Mutual. OA News at OAOA.com. Austin. Texas Mutual Insurance Company, a policyholder-owned company and a provider of workers' compensation insurance, has distributed $330 million in dividends to 57,000 policyholders across the state. The distribution went to 665 Ector County companies. Texas Mutual paid out these dividends 2 months ahead of schedule to support businesses during the coronavirus pandemic, a news release said. As part of this year's program, Texas Mutual awarded $8,031,595 in dividends to 665 Ector County companies, which they can use to reinvest back into their business and local communities. The dividend program allows Texas Mutual to share its success with loyal policyholders who display a commitment to preventing workplace accidents and helping injured workers get back on the job. Dividends are based on each company's loss ratio and history with Texas Mutual. About 80% of Texas Mutual policyholders received dividends this year. This is the 22nd year Texas Mutual has distributed policyholder dividends, bringing the total to $3.1 billion delivered back to Texas businesses, the release said. Ector County employers are thankful for Texas Mutual's commitment to workplace safety and our local economy, said Gary Felker, president of Malum Felker Insurance. Even in the most challenging times, Texas Mutual stands with local businesses that are making a difference in their communities through workplace safety efforts and employment. This is Kay reading the Odessa American for Thursday, October 8th, 2020, local and state. ECISD phasing more students in. OA News at OAOA.com. It might be a little unexpected, but Ector County ISD plans to phase in students who are currently learning with a combination of virtual and in-person back to campuses starting October 19th. If all continues to go well, The ECISD website said the phasing will run through November 16th. This is available for students and families if they wish to make the switch. In his media call Wednesday, Superintendent Scott Murray said parents were notified Tuesday night. We are really pleased with the current health conditions in our community. Our community continues to wear masks. It continues to maintain social distancing and continues to wash hands. Because of the good community data, coupled with the good data we've seen in our own school system, the safety procedures and processes that we've put in place are proving to be effective, Murray said. Students, staff, and teachers following the protocols has allowed ECISD to open its doors a little bit wider to begin serving more students in person, he said. October 19th will be the start of what is being called Phase 5. We will bring back, again, for those hybrid students that choose to do so, our 3rd, 4th, 5th, 6th, and 9th graders can begin transitioning from hybrid to full-time, face-to-face, on October 19th. We'll monitor that for a 2-week period of time, and if things go well, then we will begin Phase 6, which is our 7th graders and our 10th graders will have an opportunity to transition from hybrid to full-time face-to-face. Then we'll again watch that for 2 weeks. If things go well, we'll finally bring in our 8th graders and 11th and 12th graders that are currently in hybrid, and we'll have that face-to-face opportunity, Murray said. He added that the district is excited to be able to do this. We will have some families, however, that are currently in a hybrid environment that may not want their children to go face-to-face, and for those families, they can certainly transition to virtual, Murray said. We will continue to provide virtual learning pre-K through 12th grade for all of our students, and we are committed to doing that for the remainder of the school year. He noted that some students in the hybrid environment are struggling to maintain the success they've experienced in prior years. They know, and their families know, that having more time in the classroom with our teachers will benefit them, Murray said. In addition, our teachers are also noticing that some of our hybrid students are struggling, so they would like to be able to serve those kids on a face-to-face basis every single day. We are glad to be able to provide this to our community and look forward to welcoming many of our students back into this new opportunity. He said more information is available on the ECISD website, the individual schools' websites, and by calling the school itself. Families who wish to make the transition should let ECISD know by filling out a form on the ECISD website. Murray said he's confident about the procedures put in place and that everyone will be kept safe. However, he was surprised to be able to do this now. To be honest with you, in the summer, just watching health conditions and listening to our medical community and understanding the nature of the disease, we were very concerned about where we would be right now in October, November, December, Murray said. We fully thought that we would have closed schools by now because of COVID outbreaks, but I have been very pleased with the work of our students and staff members, just how they're following all of the safety guidelines, and I'm very pleased with how the safety guidelines that we put in place are working. Our kids are safe, our staff members are safe. We're very grateful to have this opportunity to bring back as many kids as we possibly can, and to maintain the same level of safety we have at our schools right now, Murray said. Trinity inducting 3 into Hall of Honor by Michael Bauer, MBAUER at OAOA.com. Midland. 3 alumni from Trinity School of Midland will be enshrined into the school's Hall of Honor today. Craig Stoker, Mary Jane Philby Dollins, and Kevin Blomqvist will all be inducted in this year's Hall of Honor in a ceremony that will take place 6:30 p.m. at Trinity. This is the fifth year that the school has done a Hall of Honor ceremony. The Hall of Honor recognizes alumni who have brought great honor to Trinity's school in their professional careers and in service to their communities. Stoker, who graduated from Trinity in 1995, is now the Director of Communications at the West Texas Food Bank. "It was certainly a surprise to be inducted into the Hall of Honor," Stoker said. "It's been a privilege to give back to Trinity in a way that hopefully encourages people who are looking for a great education to go there. Also, it's the recognition for the work in the community, which is never about me, but helps highlight the work that the food bank does." Stoker is a third-generation Odessan. He says one of the ways that Trinity helped him was give him the opportunity to grow up without being under a microscope. "The staff and teachers really let the students make their own mistakes and learn from them in a way that was constructive. So not only did I get a good education, but I got an education of what it means to be a good citizen, what it means to be a good friend, and I credit Trinity for that." Philby Dollins graduated from Trinity in 2001 and is also honored to be a part of a select group of alumni. "I know that it is a fairly new award," Philby Dollins said. "I'm very excited about it." Philby Dollins is currently the Outreach Director for Women's Services for the St. David's Healthcare Partnership in Austin. Not only is she a part of a small group of alumni receiving the award, she's also one of the few people who attended school at Trinity from early childhood to high school. "That's what they call a lifer, actually," Philby Dollins said. "I was only one of five in my graduating class of 34 with this distinction." Blomqvist, who was born and raised in Midland, was in the high school graduating class of 1970. "I'd do anything for Trinity," Blomqvist said. "They're very kind to let me be one of their Hall of Honor recipients. There are a lot more qualified people for it, but you take what you take." Blomqvist is the managing director of Blomqvist Investment Group, as well as a nationally recognized investment broker. "Trinity not only helped me and my brother and sister," Blomqvist said. "It's not just about learning, but it's about athletics. It's about social, and it's about the diversity of a school. I think that's important. It wasn't just a private school. It helped me to learn with different people." Hello, this is Kay reading the Odessa American for Thursday, October 8th, 2020. Opinion. Texas View. Biden offers compassion and rigor on immigration. The Point. Biden should have to answer for the mistakes of his and Obama's immigration policy, but offers ideas to address them. Much like climate change and health care, immigration is an issue that starkly divides President Donald Trump and former Vice President Joe Biden. In policies, they are mirror opposites. This isn't to say Biden has a strong record on immigration. President Barack Obama, with Biden as vice president, deported a record 3 million people in 8 years in office. Obama also oversaw widespread family raids that sought to deport Central American mothers and children. But Obama also sought to protect young immigrants brought to the United States as children from deportation, and Biden and Obama have advocated for comprehensive immigration reform. Trump is the most anti-immigration president in modern history, having signed more than 400 executive actions on immigration. Biden's immigration plans begin with reversing Trump's actions over the past 4 years, including an amended version of the travel ban that marked the beginning of the Trump administration. They also differ on the border wall. In 2016, Trump's repeated promise of a border wall emerged as both metaphor and real structure. The wall along the United States' 2,000-mile border with Mexico, and Trump's vow that Mexico would pay for it, was the centerpiece of his campaign and immigration policy. But construction has been slow going, and Mexico hasn't paid for any of it. Instead, the $15 billion which the administration has allocated for 738 miles of wall and fencing has been diverted from the budgets of Homeland Security, the Defense Department, and the Treasury Forfeiture Fund. Biden, who voted for the Secure Fence Act of 2006, would stop this diversion and use the money for border enforcement efforts. Trump has also repeatedly challenged the Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals, or DACA, program created under Obama. In 2017, Trump ended the program, but last June, the Supreme Court ruled against Trump, giving Dreamers a reprieve. However, the decision wasn't made on the program's substance, but on administrative procedure and the manner in which the administration exercised its decision. After the court's decision, the administration limited DACA renewals to 1 year instead of two and rejected new applications. Biden has said he would strengthen the program and establish a pathway to citizenship for Dreamers and their parents. The decades-long inability of the United States to come up with a fair and comprehensive immigration policy is a bipartisan failure of Congress and the executive branch. Trump not only has made asylum, which is a legal right, more difficult, but he punishes those who seek it. Before his migrant protection protocols, or Remain in Mexico program, migrants were held at a U.S. Customs and Border Protection processing facility until it was decided if they should be released, transferred to immigration detention, or deported. Now they are sent back to Mexico until their immigration court hearings. Thousands of asylum seekers have languished in unsanitary camps along the border, where they are often preyed upon by gangs and bad actors. But nowhere are the cruelties more unconscionable and heartbreaking than the administration's zero-tolerance policy, which forcibly separated thousands of children from parents and legal guardians at the border. Trump eventually signed an executive order ending his administration's practice of forced separation of families, but the harm done to the children is incalculable. Because the administration wanted this to be a deterrent to other immigrants coming to the United States, there are parents and children who may never see each other again. Biden has said he'll make it a priority to reunite the separated families. Biden should have to answer for the mistakes and deficiencies of his and Obama's immigration policy. He has called the deportations a big mistake, but he does offer ideas to address them and create a more compassionate, yet rigorous, policy. Trump's focus remains on simply punishing those not fortunate to have been born in the United States, but who dream of being here and making a better life. We favor Biden's blend of compassion and rigor. San Antonio Express News. Hello, this is Kay reading the Odessa American for Thursday, October 8, 2020. Obituary. McCrary Ramos family. Rankin. On October 3, 2020, our precious girls, Christina McCrary, 30, Riley Ramos, 9, and Reese Ramos, 4, walked into Jesus' sweet arms. Christina was a substitute teacher at the Rankin School District. Riley and Reese were both students, and all three were very active in their community. They loved the Rankin community. They passed unexpectedly from injuries sustained in a car accident on Highway 349, 15 miles north of Rankin. Christina McCrary, or Chrissy, as she was known to her friends and family, was born on October 10, 1989, to Melissa Trout and Michael McCrary. As a baby, she moved to Rankin with her special mom, Shelley Nail, and special dad, Kobe Nail, brother Zane Nail, sister Zoe Fernandez, and husband Brian and sister Zia Nail. Chrissy attended Rankin schools. She had a passion and talent for designing and making mums for her school. Her laugh would light up the room. When she started laughing, she would laugh so hard, tears would stream down her beautiful face, making everyone else start laughing. Chrissy worked for Texas Energy for many years, making great friends along the way that became a part of her family. She had recently become a substitute teacher and loved the children and her job. It was her dream job. She loved being there and being a part of this wonderful school system and was looking forward to many years there. Riley Ramos was born on February 14, 2011, to Rogelio Ramos Jr., Roger, and Christina McCrary. She was so full of personality, with the most beautiful long red hair you have ever seen. Riley was in the third grade and loved school. She was very active in her community. She was the first to give you the biggest hug and kisses ever. She also loved to create makeup tutorials on TikTok and was very good at it. Riley's favorite thing was to hunt fish and work the ranch with her dad. Reese Ramos was born on January 6, 2016, to Rogelio Ramos Jr., Roger, and Christina McCrary. She was our beautiful, shy girl that had come out of her shell and loved everyone. Reese was in pre-K and was so excited to be the big girl going to school. She loved going to school, especially when her mom was nearby substitute teaching. Reese loved coloring, drawing, and playing Roblox with Riley and her friends. Hunting, fishing, and working the ranch with her dad was also a favorite activity for this sweet girl. Our three precious girls loved to be surrounded by family and friends. Their favorite time was traveling with and spending time at both ranches with our family. Holidays were the best. Our three precious girls were survived by husband and father, Rogelio Ramos Jr., Roger, from Rankin, special mom Shelley Nail, special dad Kobe Nail, Zane Nail, Zoe Fernandez, and husband Brian, Zia Nail of Rankin, Casey Freeman, Odessa, Samantha McCrary and Patrick Evans, Austin, Lindsay Cox, Melissa Trout, and Mike McCrary. Grandparents, Gloria Alicia Ramos, Pat, Big Dad and wife Donna, Grandma, Ron and Debbie Nail, Johnny and Nancy Dumas, Kitty and Stan Crimpin, Dallas, and Christy Freeman. Sister-in-law, brothers-in-law, aunts, uncles, Jessica Ramos Garcia and Tomas Garcia Jr., Kevin and Kendra Ramos, Mike and Carol Trout, Bob and Deb Lynch, Steve and Joanne Lynch, Marcus and Kathy Crimpin. Nieces, nephews, cousins, Tomas Garcia III, Preston Garcia, Aubrey E. Ramos, Christian Ramos Gonzalez, and Avery N. Ramos, and Nathan Crimpin, with many more family and friends. There will be Celebration of Life services held in Rankin, Texas, at 1 p.m. on October 9, 2020, at the Rankin School Auditorium, with graveside services at the Rankin Cemetery Pavilion immediately following. Pallbearers, Marcus Abalos, Joe Ramos, Taylor Dickerson, Tomas Garcia III, Preston Garcia, Juan Garcia, Zane Nail, Will Langley, Brian Fernandez, Marcus Crimpin, Nathan Crimpin, Pete Jackson. Arrangements are under the care of Schaefer Nichols Funeral Home of Crane. Death Notices. Guadalupe Sierra Garcia, Odessa. Guadalupe Sierra Garcia, 82, of Odessa, died Tuesday, October 6, 2020, in Odessa. Funeral services scheduled for 10 a.m., October 13, 2020, at Sunset Memorial Funeral Home. Burial will follow at Sunset Memorial Gardens. Arrangements are by Sunset Memorial Gardens and Funeral Home of Odessa. Desi Marie O.G. Pride, Odessa. Desi Marie O.G. Pride, 85, of Odessa, Texas, died Wednesday, September 30th, 2020, in Odessa, Texas. Celebration of Life will be held at 1 p.m. Friday, October 9th, 2020, at Bethlehem Baptist Church, 1000 West Clements Street, Odessa, Texas, 79763. Burial will follow at Ector County Cemetery, the Odessa 2 section. Reverend Darren Willis is officiating. Arrangements are by Martinez Funeral Home and Crematory of Odessa, Texas. Irma Lee Tatum, Odessa. Irma Lee Tatum, 87, of Odessa, Texas, died Friday, October 2, 2020, in Odessa, Texas. Celebration of Life will be held at 11 a.m. Saturday, October 10, 2020, at Rose of Sharon Baptist Church. At the family request, cremation has been opted as alternative means of burial for Mrs. Tatum. Pastor Windsor L. Archie is officiating. Arrangements are by Martinez Funeral Home and Crematory of Odessa, Texas. Standard treatment for penile cancer. Dear Dr. Roach, what can you tell me about cancer of the penis? I can't seem to find information. S.S. Answer. Cancer of the penis is quite rare in industrialized nations, accounting for less than 1% of all cancers in men. By contrast, it is quite common in parts of Africa, Asia, and South America, where it can account for 10% to 20% of all cancers. One risk factor is phimosis, an inability to retract the foreskin. Circumcision decreases risk of penile cancer, but careful lifelong hygiene, thus avoiding phimosis, reduces the risk of penile cancer to the same level as seen in circumcised men. Human papillomavirus is another risk factor, found in 30% to 50% of penile cancers. HIV infection and tobacco use are other risk factors. Surgery is the standard treatment for cancer of the penis. The goal of treatment is to preserve as much of the penis as possible in order to maintain sexual and urinary function. There are alternative treatments, including topical medications, radiation, and laser treatment. Finding a cancer center with experience in treating penile cancer would be ideal. With only about 2,000 cases per year in the U.S., even many urologists have limited experience. To your good health, Dr. Keith Roach. Roach's column appears Tuesdays through Saturdays. Readers may write him at P.O. Box 536. 475, Orlando, Florida, 32853-6475. Hello, this is Kay reading the Odessa American for Thursday, October 8th, 2020, etc. Man's internet addiction makes woman a social media widow. Dear Abby, I realize that social media is a big part of today's world, and I have no problem with someone using it to stay in contact with family and friends, but at what point is it deemed an addiction? My significant other spends hours every day scrolling through his Facebook and Twitter pages. I have tried discussing it with him, but it becomes an argument. Now I just sit in the same room with him, silent and waiting until it's my turn for his attention. How can I get him to realize how isolated from him it makes me feel and that my presence doesn't seem to be needed? Should I just accept that he's an addict and move on? Offline in Florida. Dear Offline, something becomes an addiction when it causes a disruption in one's life. Your significant other isn't the first person who been seduced by the internet. He may argue with you because he doesn't realize the amount of time he spends glued to his screen. Try this. Quietly clock the time he's on FB and Twitter for 1 week. Afterward, ask him if he realizes how much time he is spending there. He may be shocked when you read him the number of hours. That's the time to express how isolated and unneeded this has made you feel. He may be willing to install an app that signals when the time limit he has allotted himself is up. Discuss making a date for the two of you to get out of the house as a couple on a regular basis, without devices, to take a walk, go to the park, or have socially distanced coffee somewhere, which may interrupt his habit and enable you to enjoy some time together when you are both fully present. If he isn't interested, you may have to decide if you want to continue being his lady-in-waiting. Dear Abby, is it rude or disrespectful for someone to change their first name? I'm in my early 30s and have wanted to change mine my whole life. I changed the spelling of my name when I was 12, and my parents legally changed it for me when I was a teenager. But I still don't like the name, and I cringe whenever I hear it. Because it's a common name for someone my age, I'm sure most people won't understand if I change it. While I respect the effort my parents put into selecting a name for me, I don't want to be stuck with this one for the rest of my life. I don't want to cause hurt feelings. However, I'm ultimately the one who has to live with it. Should I do what feels right for me, or must I accept the negative feelings and the disconnect I have toward the name to spare my family's feelings? Disconnected out west. Dear Disconnected, many people change their names for various reasons. If you feel the need to do it in order to be a more authentic version of yourself, go for it. Assuming you have told your parents how you feel about your first name, I doubt they'll be any more upset about it than they were when they helped you change its spelling as a teenager. A word of caution, however. The process may take more time than you would like because the pandemic has slowed the court system considerably. Also, once you change your name, you will need to change it on all official identifying documents, such as your driver's license, insurance documents, passport, etc., which can be time-consuming. Dear Abby, Abigail Van Buren, write Dear Abby at P.O. Box 69440, Los Angeles, California, 90069, or visit www.dearabby.com.
Jacqueline Begar Stars by Madeline Aslan. Note, Begar Stars is based on the degree of your sun at birth. The sign name is simply a label that astrologers put on a set of degrees for convenience. For best results, readers should refer to the dates following each sign. A baby born today has a sun in Libra and a moon in Gemini until 11:45 a.m., when the moon enters Cancer. Happy birthday for Thursday, October 8th, 2020. Romantic, imaginative, and capable, you're a free spirit who embraces all of life. This year, don't get too sidetracked, and you will be extremely successful. If single, you require someone to match your sharp intellect, and you search far and wide. Next summer, you meet him or her. If attached, you're on a fabulous romantic adventure and are exquisitely happy with your partner. Sagittarius inspires you. The stars show the kind of day you'll have. 5, dynamic. 4, positive. 3, average. 2, so-so. 1, difficult. Aries, March 21st through April 19th, 4 stars. Hidden feelings and thoughts harbored by coworkers are brought out into the open. Your early background and the influences of your heritage are potent. Be aware of what your family tree can reveal about you. Diplomacy is a must today. Tonight, others surprise you. Taurus, April 20th through May 20th, 5 stars. You'll be drawn to excitement and travel. Education is important, and there might be contact with in-laws. Vitality is high, and your self-image is upbeat. Positive feedback from family and friends makes you feel good about yourself. Tonight, serious discussion with a sibling or a cousin. Gemini, May 21st through June 20th. 4 stars. You might have some financial promises to keep. Others depend on you for security on many levels. You break up your work with interesting side trips. Adding novelty to your daily routine and obligations will renew your enthusiasm. Tonight, counting your pennies. Cancer, June 21st through July 22nd. 5 stars. Your mind is clear and creative with luminous insights. You can write and speak effectively, and you benefit from studies. The role of teacher or even crusader falls into place naturally. Tonight, plan to travel, if at all possible, over the next few months. Leo, July 23rd through August 22nd. 4 stars. Cultivate supportive people today. Be reserved with those who could be draining or are a source of turmoil. Those you're closest to are moving into a new circle. Think of their changes as a positive growth pattern. Tonight, the beauties of wildlife or wilderness areas. Virgo, August 23rd through September 22nd, 4 stars. Contact people who seem interesting or potentially helpful for your work. Your social circle widens. Consider joining an organization you believe in. It's a time to grow and to expand your belief system. Tonight, early bedtime. Libra, September 23rd through October 22nd, 4 stars. Friends think of you and trust you with their confidences. Competitive feelings build at work. Be tactful. Channel irritation into making constructive changes. Being volatile won't get you much else. Tonight, a surprise conversation is very revealing. A friend announces a new event. Scorpio, October 23rd through November 21st, 4 stars. Your high standards and aspirations impress others and make it easy to enlist support for your projects. A friendship with a foreign-born person brings not only companionship, but a new perspective. Tonight, you'll want to clear away dead weight and debris. Sagittarius, November 22nd through December 21st, 3 stars. You will be able to solve puzzles and satiate your curiosity. Others reveal their inner secrets to you in casual conversation. Others make suggestions about money management. Check with your inner psyche before acting too quickly on unsolicited advice. Tonight, relax. Capricorn, December 22nd through January 19th, 4 stars. Today puts you in the role of mediator or diplomat, both among friends and with coworkers. Social prospects are good. There is a new solidarity and security coming into relationships. You're particularly sensitive to beauty. Tonight, enjoying remote landscapes. Aquarius, January 20th through February 18th, 4 stars. Today brings insight into how others see your role in their lives. Balance emotions with a touch of whimsical humor in approaching those you care about. An offer or opportunity you've been awaiting should come through. Tonight, a great sigh of relief. Pisces, February 19th through March 20th, 5 stars. Romantic interludes are delightful, and there might be an invitation to a harvest festival. Younger people introduce you to new interests. You're energetic. Your health and fitness are improving. Your working conditions might be less than perfect. Tonight, a special bonding session with your pet. Born today, actress Sigourney Weaver, 1949. Comedian Chevy Chase, 1943. Actor Matt Damon, 1970.
Thank you for joining us for the readings of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.